Welcome to the 108 Stitches Show. In this week's episode, I have Matt Leininger with me. He's the social media guy, guru behind the Columbus Clippers account. Thank you, Matt, for joining me on this episode.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
What made you want to work in baseball?
I've played baseball my entire life, you know, going up through high school and stuff, and didn't get the opportunity to play in college, but it's always been a very, very strong love for me. So being able to work in baseball now, at this point in my life is pretty awesome, not going to lie.
I mean, I work in the field too. I mean, I'm cover the game for a living. Well, try to anyway. But it's fun. I mean, we get to come to the ballpark every day for a job.
Not
a
whole lot. Paid to watch baseball.
Not a whole lot of people can say that.
No.
How long have you been working for the Clippers?
Just finished up my fifth season, handling the public address announcing duties, and this was my first season handling the social media and website aspect for the Clippers.
Being a, how do you like being the public address announcer?
That is one of my, one of the simple joys in life for me is being able to announce for an amazing organization like this. That's, you know, speaking is my love. You know, the social media and website and stuff, that's the career, but you know, speaking is what I truly enjoy. I love being able to not necessarily have the crowd eating out of the palm of my hand, because I don't quite have that power. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, being able to be informative and let the fans know what's going on and whatnot. That's I thoroughly enjoy that part of my job.
What was name a player that you think you thought you would never get to call his name out during your time?
Let's see. You know, you can always go with the Brohio mayor, Nick Swisher. Never got the opportunity to announce him earlier this year. You know, you have some veterans come through every now and then, and you know, it's, you don't always get the opportunity to meet them, but just being able to announce them and whatnot, and you know, being able to see guys like Lonnie Chisenhall and Jason Kipnis come up through the organization, Francisco Lindor, and you know, have a year or two to be able to watch them personally and then see them move on up into the next level and move up to the Tribe and whatnot, that's pretty awesome. And you know, you get that with a lot of opposing players too that come through on some of the other teams. They you know, you'll be sitting there watching, and all of a sudden you see a guy come across that you know, a la Todd Frazier. You know, he's been in the news a lot lately. Yep. But you know, he's a guy that, you know, came through the Cincinnati organization with playing for Louisville and whatnot, and he was definitely a special player. I know Billy Hamilton was a special player. He's somebody that was a lot of fun to watch in that same organization. So being able to see guys come through there like that and then seeing them later on up in the pros, it's a pretty cool feeling. Not that they have any idea who I am, and I don't expect them to, but you know, you see guys like I said with Kipnis and Chisenhall and stuff, those are names that were here when I started and will always kind of have a special place for me.
Speaking of that, do you like the fact that you'll get to see these players before, you know, they become household names once they reach the majors?
Absolutely. You know, having the opportunity to watch Francisco Lindor, you know, in the beginning of the year this year, first half of the season this year, and the latter half in 2014, that was you know, there's a lot of hype surrounding him. It was a lot of fun to be able to just kind of sit back and watch him perform, because players like that are special. And, you know, we've got a couple guys making their way towards us coming up, guys like Clint Frazier, Bobby Bradley, some of the young up-and-coming guys that are really that haven't quite reached the AAA level, but will be here very soon. It's cool to sit back and see when players get to this level, and then right before they leave, how much they progress and improve and whatnot. And it's just one of the things that the majority of baseball fans don't really get to see. You know, if you don't have a quality minor league club in your town, or only have a pro team, not that it'd be a bad thing to live in Cleveland or Cincinnati, but I enjoy seeing the prospects develop, and that's the cool part about here in Columbus.
The one thing I like about minor league baseball in general is how close you can get to the players that you can't necessarily get to major leaguers. Do you think that resonates with fans that have minor league teams in their towns?
Oh, absolutely. We had one of the first things I got to do when I started doing the social media stuff was I had a young mother. I say young mother. I mean, her daughter was 12 or 13, but she was a special needs child, and she had met Tyler Holt, a player that's no longer with our organization, but is
he's with the Reds, by the way. I got to meet him.
He's a
couple weeks ago. Side story, real quick. My wife bought me a Great American Ballpark stadium seat, and I got to interview Tyler Holt here last season before he was traded away. And she surprised me and got him to sign it for me.
Nice.
And when I met him, he remembered me. And I was, like, shocked that he would actually remember me.
Yeah, that's the type of player Tyler Holt is. He's class act. And the Indians the Reds definitely gained something. Definitely gained a quality person. Not just a baseball player, not just a good athlete, but a quality person when they picked up Tyler. But Tyler had met this girl after the game over the summer, and she's special needs and doesn't do well around adults. And for some odd reason, the lady's daughter had she'd just taken to Tyler and opened up and was, you know, wasn't holding back and wasn't being shy or anything around him, and was just kind of glowing. And so she contacted me, or not me per se, but she contacted the Clippers social media page or the Clippers Facebook page, and just thanking wanted to say thank you to Tyler and thank you to the organization for, you know, making something like that possible. And so I took it, printed it out, and took it down to Tyler, and, you know, Tyler teared up, and he loved it. He's sat there and we talked about traded some old war stories about when we met stars when we were younger and getting autographs and stuff. And the whole while I'm doing that, he's kind of rummaging through his bag, and he finds a bat, pulls it out, signs it, hands it to me, and says, "Give this to her," because we had arranged for her and her mom to be at the game that day. And then took the bat down to her, and she loved it, and it was glowing the whole time, the entire game and stuff, and got to see Tyler afterwards and whatnot. And that's one of the cool things that I get to do on this end of my job, and just being able to connect little things like that. And that's really, it's a cool feeling for me. And because I know one of the stories that I'd actually traded with Tyler was, oh goodness, I couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 years old, and I grew up in the Toledo area, so I went to a lot of Mudhens games growing up at the old Ned Skelton Stadium, the old minor league ballpark style, just a beautiful piece of garbage it was. I loved it there, but it just so happened that Norm Charlton was down on a rehab assignment, and he tossed me a ball, and I'll never forget that. It was all the games that I went to there. I remember getting a ball from Norm Charlton, and that happened 23, 24 years ago. So that type of stuff really resonates with fans, and you never know when something like that is going to happen. But that's what the beautiful thing is about minor league baseball, because it happens so much more than it does up in the bigs, just because, like you said, there's so much more access to these players.
Speaking of rehab, is there always more attendance when a major league player comes down for rehab?
There's a little bit of a buzz, yeah, and you can kind of stand behind it and push it a little bit on my end as far as website and social media stuff goes. When we have a guy come down like Swisher or Mitch Chisenhall down over the year or over the summer for
3 games.
Yeah. Was that all he was down for?
I thought it was 3. I'm pretty sure, wasn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, you can go through that, but it's definitely not relied upon. And that's one of the nice things about working for such a great organization like this and such an amazing city like Columbus, that we average in the top 5 in attendance in minor league baseball every year. And that just kind of goes to show that, you know, we don't have to back on the fact that we need a guy down rehabbing just to put butts in the seats. That's a nice plus. It'll sell us a few extra tickets, absolutely, don't get me wrong. But it's nothing that we rely upon.
Speaking of, like, attendance, what goes into, like, promotions and stuff? Because I know minor league baseball is, like, very, very big on promotions. Very and promotion with the driven, recent yes. Thing that was held in September, they had the promotional seminar here in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
What's, like, a behind-the-scenes look at, like, some of the promotional stuff? Like, how's that work?
Well, it's laid out by our promotional staff before the season. You know, we have specific nights where we do, obviously, you know, our famous night is Mondays. That's when we have our Dime a Dog nights, and that pretty much sells itself. You know, you have different specials going throughout each night, different appearances. You can, like, Jake the Diamond Dog shows up every now and then. B-Boy McCoy is my personal favorite. But that's all stuff that's kind of, you know, that's what we do at the beginning of the year. Beginning of the year, not the actual season, but the beginning of the year. That just kind of, it sets the stage for the season and what's going on as far as what we're planning out with promotion-wise. And so always try to have something to draw the fans in, because when it comes to minor league baseball, I can't say the majority, but there's a fair portion of fans who are just here for the experience, not necessarily here to watch baseball. You get your baseball purist fans, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to say that I'm one of them. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's why they're here. So you have to do things to get them here and keep them here.
Is it hard keeping fans as far as, like, lifelong fans? Because I know, like, there's certain other teams that, you know, had fans, you know, for 40-plus years that's, like, older. Does Clippers have any fans like that?
No, we have season ticket holders that have been with us since the Clippers came into existence.
If you're listening, the Clippers have a history museum out in the left field area, bar area. It's really cool.
Yeah, there's the Hall of Fame bar and grill out there in the left field building where we have our cargo shop, and then up on the top is the little roof deck with roosters and whatnot. But if you want to see some cool memorabilia and whatnot, and, you know, see a plethora of history of Columbus baseball, then the Hall of Fame bar is the place to go.
It's pretty cool, because
you get to see stuff from the Redbirds and stuff from the Columbus Jets and, like, Junior Jets and all that, and it's really neat, especially with the experience you get from checking out, you know, all the pics of the old coop. I mentioned Ed Skeldon earlier. The coop falls right into that, just that classic minor league baseball stadium that it's just, it that's where the baseball purists loved to go.
The coop was before my time. I wish I would have got up here because I'm not originally from Columbus. I'm from Cincinnati area.
And neither am I. I never personally got to see a Clippers game at Cooper Stadium. I got to see some state baseball, state high school baseball games there. But that still being able to be there, just walking in for a high school game, you feel the history. You know, you can feel the past, and it's really is awesome.
We're going to be talking about social media a lot too today in this episode. Name some good thing. Like, we already touched on one good thing was Tyler Holt and the special needs young lady. What are some other good aspects about social media and sports?
Well, it's the, you know, obviously it's the most up to second news source that we have. You know, that's the beauty behind Twitter. But it's a way to be able to connect with the fans. It's a way to be able to let the fans know what's going on, and ultimately, it just it's a view into professional sports for fans. You get a behind the scenes look. They get to be able to, you know, learn more about their favorite players and whatnot. Whereas, back in the day, you'd have, you know, you read what you got in the newspapers and maybe a book every now and then, but you didn't know what Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth and all them were really doing. We know now, but you didn't know then, and I don't know, that's probably good considering the lives that they led, but I don't know, it's just a way to connect, you know, connect fans with sports and athletes that they love. That they hate as well, but I don't know. So the social media aspect is so strong, and really I'm still learning. You know, I'm learning as I go. I learn new stuff every single day, and it ultimately that's what makes this job fun, because it's never boring and it's never the same exact thing.
I think there's a good side of social media, and there's also a dark side, a very dark side of social media. Mm. And we've seen that in, like, the Jason Hayward trade to the Cubs from the Cardinals. The so-called best fans of baseball really wasn't so best fans of baseball that day. From the reactions of certain people, I mean, they tweeted out, like, I hope he breaks his effing leg. I hope he dies. That's taking social media too far. When
it's...
I guess what I'm trying to say is, when is a good thing to step back and say, wait a minute, should I type that or not?
The problem is that the majority of it, what writer, some writer just got in trouble for saying something about just a bunch of kids in their parents' basements typing on a computer. But ultimately, that's the issue.
I think it comes down to society in general too.
Everybody's tougher when they're standing behind something. So I had a good analogy earlier about it, and I'm trying to think of exactly that. Oh, okay. So social media to me is kind of like bank robbers who wear masks. You could very easily go in, you can go in and rob a bank without a mask, but you feel safer if you have a mask on because people don't know who you are. Well, social media, the majority of people would never say the things that they say straight to that person's face.
I was just getting ready to say that.
They would never say that to that person's face, but because they've got a computer and they've got a laptop or a cell phone that they can type and they know that they're safe, they'll say whatever they want. And it's... And a lot of times it's just sad. And you see, the one thing that you see a lot, and I don't have to deal with it, luckily enough, is... I saw it yesterday with a kid committed to Michigan, the number one running back in the nation committed to Michigan. And they're people talking smack, sending death threats to a 17, 18-year-old kid who just chose where he wanted to go to college. And you're... You see a lot of people with voices that shouldn't have voices.
Yes.
Now, in some cases, that's good. But in most cases, especially when it comes to sports, it's just... It's almost sad.
Now, I know, like, for a long time, you know, people would, like, threaten people on social media and law enforcement can't do anything about it. Do you think the law enforcement has definitely stepped up their game to try to prevent, you know, actual threats being played out?
I know as far as, like, the local law enforcement's, you know, slamming down on or cracking down on, you know, cyberbullying of kids and whatnot. Like, I feel that's a very good thing. But I don't really know how much you can come to regulate it. You know, and when you get into the ISIS stuff and the government and all that, it's just, I don't really know how you handle that. I don't know if you need to crack down on it more, if you just kind of have to let it go and hope that people are legitimately good, but people are just legitimately are not good anymore.
Yeah, and I can say that from like a writer's standpoint, because like we usually get the brunt of it just because, like, I don't know, like people expect us to know behind the scenes stuff, and like sometimes we really don't know what's going on. Then, like, you get attacked for, like, no reason whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, if you pull up, Indians have one very similar. And this was done by my, the former director of social media. But if you look at our bio on our Twitter, it legitimately says we do not make roster decisions.
That's the number one thing I cannot stand. Especially if you're griping about a minor league team, you should know that minor league team does not make those decisions. It's the major league club that makes those decisions, and it's not even the person behind that major league club's Twitter account that makes those decisions. He's just there to pass along that news. I don't understand why people attack the Twitter account of that team. It's not like the owners is going to read it.
Yeah, especially when, you know, I didn't have to deal with it, but there was a lot of when Josh Samuels, our former director of social media, was here dealing with the Francisco Lindor stuff. You know, when's Frankie getting called up? Why hasn't he been called up? You should send him up, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you understood that. Ultimately, the director of social media is a low-level employee who has absolutely, especially on the minor league level, has no connections to anybody with the big league club, let alone able to say, oh, hey, by the way, at Steven6124 says we should call up Francisco Lindor. So since he says that, you should probably do it.
I could tell you what they probably get. They probably get the same press releases that I get emailed to me from the minor league club. And then once they get that email to them, they'll tweet out that news.
On my end, as far as like roster moves and stuff, like I cannot post anything. No matter what I hear, I can't post anything until the Indians post it.
Yep.
So like today the Trav signed Jared Grubb to a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. Like I'd heard about that, but it wasn't until I had gotten, you know, the official press release email that I could actually, you know, release it to the public. Until then, you know, my lips are sealed. I can't.
I'm the same way as like a writer. It's like we was talking about the Brandon Phillips trade, possibly going to Nationals earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Fox Sports DC tweeted out that breaking news: Brandon Phillips has been traded to Nationals. Then 30 minutes later, they had to tweet out he had approved the trade. I was like,
And that's where the most up-to-the-second, you know, news source is. Because, yes, you get the news really quick, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the news is true. As Abraham Lincoln once said, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
And let that sink in, folks, for a little bit. See if we can get...
I read that online once.
Yeah, I did too. I think I even shared it on Facebook once, and people was like, wait,
he really said that? He did not say that. No, he did not. It's like, oh, come on.
And that's probably like one of the things I hate about Twitter is that people want the news now, and they can't wait till it becomes official. Like, especially like some diehard fans that take it a little bit too far to almost like borderline stalker level. And it's like aggravating because you just want to say something, but you can't.
Oh, man. Yeah, I have to it's difficult sometimes because I have to remember that I'm not the one speaking. I'm speaking for the organization. So, therefore, you know, a lot of my opinions, a lot of my thoughts, a lot of my views are null and void because I have to do what is best for you know, best or what is right for the organization to say. And I think one of the most difficult days that I had on this job was a day that it was Pride Day. And we had a big thing for a big thing for Gay Pride Night, and Billy Bean here was here to throw out a first pitch, and we had the Gay Softball World Series was in Columbus, and it was a big deal. Stonewall Columbus did a great job with that event and whatnot, and so I had just simply taken our logo, and which had been done in the past, and kind of just removed the inside of it and put the rainbow flag on the inside. And there was it was 50-50. There was a lot of good, like, oh, this is awesome, this is great, this is amazing, whatever, blah blah blah, this is great that you support. And then there was a whole lot of, oh, stick to baseball, or oh, this is disgusting, oh, this makes me sick. And you know, as much as you as difficult as that was on my end, especially because I was very new to the job at the time, you know, you worry that that's going to affect ticket sales and that's going to, you know, make our attendance go down and things like that. And so that was kind of really toeing the line on, because that's a, you know, being pro gay rights is something that I'm very passionate about personally. So because of some of the people that are some of my family members that, people are very close to me, some good friends and whatnot, and it's something that I'm very passionate about and I believe very strongly in. But that was like, that was really toeing the line on it, and you know, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't do it again, but there's definitely a lot more thought that has to go into that sort of thing. But also, judging by the 34,000 people we had here in the last three games of the season, I think we're doing okay.
Yeah, I would too. It's just, it all comes down, I think, a lot of the, I mean, speaking of the gay issue, I think a lot of it comes down to religion. And I'm, like, if you know me personally, I'm very religious, but I'm also, I don't, you know, condone those people. The people just because of their lifestyle. I mean, I never have gotten that. It's just they're people too. That's the way I look at it.
That's all it is. Race, color, sex, sexual orientation. It cut us, we bleed.
Yeah.
We're all the same on the inside, and it's sad sometimes to see the hatred and the bigotry. And I'm an ordained minister. Okay, like I'm a Christian as well, but it's very, very difficult, but there's no reason for people to be hiding behind religion to show their bigotry.
And I agree.
Looking for an excuse to hate another human being because of the way that they are. You can't change that. That's not a choice.
The reason I brought religion up is because of there's also been ball players that's been very religious. There's a team, like, especially like if it's an up and coming star that's religious, and I don't know if like the Indians has had this issue or not. I know Louisville Bats had it with Michael Lorenzen. He's like very religious and stuff like that. Do you handle it by case-by-case basis? And it's the same thing. It's like we was talking about earlier. People hide behind the screens and tweet, oh, I'm not coming to see you just because you're religious. I mean, that's the opposite end, too, to that issue in society. It's like, why can't we all just get along?
I wish we could all just get along. That would make life so much easier. I honestly haven't had to deal with anything majorly on the racial stuff outside or on the religion side of it. I think it's more of a it's more of a case by case basis. You kind of have to treat every situation a little bit differently. And I would certainly hope that we wouldn't have that kind of issue in Columbus, being such a progressive city and such an open-minded and such a smart city. The second highest gay population per capita in the country behind San Francisco. And they're also one of the top five fastest growing cities overall in the nation. And that's why it was refreshing to see all the positive feedback that came from, you know, the Pride Day and stuff and the logo switch up and whatever. And I can see where some people are coming from in the sense of saying just stick with baseball. But at the same time, on Italian night, we put the Italian flag behind us. On Hispanic night, you know, it's the Mexican flag. Like there's so many different things that we do and so many different organizations that we work with and have nights out here and you know have group outings and whatnot, and you know we're not going to say no, you know, and we're going to welcome everyone within reason with open arms.
Yeah,
and you know that's the beauty of connecting sports with, you know, a community. And you can do that with a small, big city like Columbus, with a small, big team like the Clippers.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially like the small, big city part about Columbus. Because if you've never been to Columbus, it's like cornfields, 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 bam, big city.
Well, that's Ohio for you.
And it's like that throughout Ohio. Like Cleveland's the same way. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati's the same way. I think I
love this state, though. It's flat and it's windy and it's cold in the winters, and we get snowed on, we get overly hot summers, and it's just we take the brunt of it, and we get a little bit of everything, and you know what, I like it that way.
Now, what is the downside to working behind the scenes in social media? Like
the pay? No, I'm just kidding. The pay is terrible at all minor league baseball. But no, it's downside, I think the major downside for me is that I'm still learning. This is all still new to me. You know, I can honestly say that I was one of the first 100 people on Facebook at Bowling Green State University back in 2004. I've been around social media for a long time. I enjoy it thoroughly, but there's a lot to learn. You know, making out the plans for the week of what I want to get out and what I want to say and what needs to be said for the organization. in the off season is incredibly difficult. In season, I've got content upon content upon content. Off season, it's difficult. I think that's kind of been the toughest part of the toughest part of this job so far has just been in the off season and having enough content to somewhat stay somewhat relevant. You know, it helps with the Blue Jackets, it helps with the crew, helps being able to talk back and forth with the Indians. Saw that the Blue Jackets Sports Illustrated just put, or ESPN just put out their social media awards or whatever, and I think they said the Tribe had one of the best social media sites in Major League Baseball, and the Blue Jackets had one of the best in the NHL, and so it's nice to have those two organizations to kind of mold off of and kind of learn off of. But that's just really where the difficult end is on my job, is that I'm still learning. I haven't done this for a full season yet. I took over halfway through this past season, and so I'm learning more every day, and you know, getting better at my job and prepping for the season to come. Hit the new year after hit Christmas and hit New Year's, and then we roll into the start of 2016 trying to sell hard and trying to sell tickets and getting ready and preparing for the season, which, you know, at this point, let's see, when does this get released? When are we releasing this next week?
Yep.
So this is right now, on this date, there's 110 days until opening day. So it'll probably be about 105, 106.
Yeah, somewhere around
something, something like that.
At a point.
Whenever we get around to releasing this, but I mean, we're almost under 100 days until the season starts. You know, April 7th is right around the corner, and we welcome back the Co-Isle West
champion
Indianapolis Indians, who
gave us fits all last year. It was neck and neck.
Neck and neck. We finished with the identical best record in minor league baseball. We were tied with them
for the season series.
We own the tiebreaker, so therefore we got the higher seed in the playoffs. But you know, and then we faced them in the Governor's Cup finals. I mean, that Chris Tremme, Dean Traynor rivalry is certainly, for minor league baseball, it's there. And you know, next year we'll play them even more, up the amount of time amount of games that you play against your in division foes. So
speaking of the Indianapolis Indians, it was announced earlier this year that the Pirates and the Reds is going to be playing an exhibition game there.
I did see that. That'll be pretty cool.
And I'll be there covering it, by the way.
Nice.
You need
help carrying your gear?
Yeah, sure. I need a photographer.
I can press a button. Click, click.
Is it a good thing, like, when minor league ballparks host their parent team? Like, I don't know if you've had that opportunity.
We did it back in 2010. We had the 2011.
When it snowed.
Yep. When the Tribe was down here. I remember I told you about that. That was actually my first day shadowing to do this job and to kind of learn my ways, because then I my first game was their next game. They did it. They played against Akron. I had the Double A club come down, and the Tribe game here, unfortunately, got snowed out beginning of April. You know, it's kind of a kind of the risk that you run with having that sort of thing. But I think it's great to get, and almost as a reward to, you know, your season ticket holders and your loyal fans, to be able to have your parent club come down and do that. I remember growing up always going to the Mud Hens Tigers games. You know, those would always sell out up in Toledo. Like, I honestly can't remember what the crowd was like here. I know there was a good amount of people here that day, but it was also snowing. So, I think that that game in Indianapolis, you know, it's sold out in a couple of days. I think that's going to be...
It sold out in less than 24 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was the quickest sellout, I believe, in minor league baseball history, I think. Dang. If I'm not mistaken.
That's impressive.
No, it's the fastest sellout at Victory Field in Victory Field history.
Because Which is a beautiful ballpark, by the way. That ballpark came out in right around the time that Camden, Orioles Stadium came out, and it was, you know, we were talking about the old classic minor league ballparks earlier. You know, that was one of the first that was kind of broke the mold and kind of went more of an actual design ballpark, and it's really a trendsetter when you think about it, and it's beautiful spot if you ever get a chance. Not really much else to do in Indiana, so stop by Victory Field and check that place out.
I like the ideas behind it because, you know, I mean, like me and my wife explained in the first week episode, I proposed to her at Louisville Slugger Field. So, like, it has a special kind of meaning to us because the Bats was playing the Reds, and it was pretty cool. I mean, I like it when major league teams come to minor league teams' town and take over for a day. I mean,
yeah. And you're seeing that a lot, you know, in that sort of sense where, you know, like, well, the Cavs come down here to Columbus for some preseason games, and, you know, the Browns are working on coming down here for training camp, and, you know, Blue Jackets going up and doing stuff with the Lake Erie Monsters in the Cleveland area. You know, that's mixing the big clubs with the minor league clubs. Really is just a reward to those fan bases, and it kind of just shows, hey, you know, we're not just little brother here. We're here to play, and also at the same time here to have fun. So it's cool. It's cool to see, and I would love to be able to get the Indians back down here at some point, and it's just a matter of us not having
snow on the ground.
Exactly.
Because, like we said, Ohio weather can be a bit tricky in the March, April range.
Well, let's see. It's 32 degrees outside right now, and it was 61 degrees 2 days ago.
And it reached 70 degrees like a couple weekends ago.
Here.
And
it's supposed to be 60 on Christmas. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. And hopefully as we get closer to the season, we've already gotten all the brunt of the cold weather out. Last year's spring was actually pretty decent and wasn't overly terrible. So here's hoping we have another something like that.
Speaking of spring training is coming up. Do you go out to spring training and just watch?
I have not. That's something that I would love to do at some point. It's just a matter of whether it logistically makes sense or not. You know, that's I'd love to go down and get a feel for it, but at the same time, you've got my responsibilities with the website and social media and stuff here. So it's maybe not this year, but maybe next year.
The reason I was asking is like because there's so many Clippers players out there, and you could get like a lot of content. To me, it'd be a no doubt that I would send the social media person, but.
I don't make those calls. I know that I would love to be there, and you know that's just another one of the things that can improve my job. And if I get that opportunity, awesome. If not, you know, I've got plenty of tribe beat writers down there that I'll be able to get enough information to last me through.
We've been talking about a little bit of everything in this podcast.
Just a little bit.
Let's talk about. What was I going to say? At a point. Hmm. rundown stuff to talk about here.
Was it about Star Wars? Because I saw it last night.
No, you cannot talk about Star Wars because awesome. I'm going to go see it Monday.
So here's what happens.
No. speaking of you spoiler people, good thing a lot of you, you know, kept, you know, us folks that didn't see it last night in mind and didn't post spoilers too much.
I did not post a spoiler. All I said was, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
I think that's one of the things I like about social media, too. Like, especially during the season, you can keep up with the game without even turning the radio or the TV on.
And see, that's one of the things that I really try to do when it comes to when we're on the road. I honestly can't remember how it was with our old guy, but I know me personally, if we're on the road, I'm here until 5 o'clock. And then once 5 o'clock hits, I go home and flip open the laptop and flip open my iPad and pull up, watch the MLB TV feed. I listen to Scott Leo and Ryan Mitchell on,
920.
Yeah. WMNI, your home of Clippers radio baseball. And then live tweet the game. And I try to it's tough not to overdo it. I like to hope that I balance it well, and that, you know, the people that can't listen or can't watch and are able to stay informed by what's happening when we're on the road. And you know, some teams will only post, like, after the third, after the sixth, after the ninth. But, I don't know, that's kind of how I view things need to be, in my opinion.
You know, like, usually I just did, I mean, of course I was at almost every home game between May and September, whenever last year. Now when he's on the road, I've done the same thing. I, you know, got a MLB TV subscription, and because
it's a tax write-off.
Yeah. I wish. It's kind of weird, like, keeping up with them on the road, because you're not, like, there in person. It's like you try to tweet.
It's not loud and obnoxious at all.
At a point, stop talking for a minute. La 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 la.
Because that's probably picking that up. But
yeah, it is. Like, see, all I have to do is go back in here and edit. Great thing about Audition.
There we go. Back to live action.
What I was getting ready to say was, it's kind of hard, like, tweeting, like, stuff that you're watching on TV. It's, like, from a different perspective. It's weird to me, almost. I don't know. I mean, you could be different than me. It's just,
it's a lot better, in my opinion, to be there live.
Yeah.
Naturally. But, you know, it's in this day and age, it's awesome to be able to have, you know, Twitter, and then be able to have the streaming service and be able to listen to the radio, you know. Just being able to have one of the three, let alone all three, that's really a bonus when it comes to my end, and hopefully for the fans as well.
You know, I mean, you are a social media guy. Where do you see social media involving too, like, as far as, like, Twitter, Facebook? Well, okay, let me rephrase it this way. If you was running Twitter and Facebook and, like, a couple other social media websites, what would you do to better that? Would you curb, like, all the hate that goes on social media? Would you put in more protections? Or
I wish there was a way to verify. Like, I wish there was a way to make it so that you could only have one account, and it has to be you, and you have to verify it, and it had, like, you have to be able to be tracked, otherwise you can't talk. Now, I say that when I'm a person who actually has two personal Twitter accounts, but the only reason that I have two is because my other one is for wrestling, and because I don't like to blow up my own timeline. Of 800, 900, I don't even know how many followers I have, of them, there's, oh, maybe 20, 25 that are wrestling fans. So come pay-per-views and Monday Night Raw, just blowing up people's timelines with stuff that they don't even care about. And all I want to do is talk wrestling. So I open a separate
account for it.
Panda account for just for wrestling. But if that were a case to verify, and you can only like, it has to be you. Suppose that's one way that I would make I would try to make that happen.
Now,
but besides that, I'm not really sure how else that you can really improve this, or, you know, make it better, or make it more strict. I think it's an open forum, and, you know, that's what social media is, and it gives you the opportunity to say whatever you want.
Speaking of, like, Twitter, what goes, like, how do you get a verified account, like the blue check mark for players or whatever? Is that up to the...
I think you have to get to a certain amount of followers, because we just actually got verified on Facebook not too long ago. And ultimately, we're not verified on Twitter as of yet. I want to say, you have to get to 100,000, or there's something that makes it verified, but we do get that little blue check here on the Facebook page now, so that's nice.
Let's see. What do you expect for the 2016 season?
You know, you want to say the answer that you're supposed to say, and say, you know, I'm expecting another Governor's Cup championship, and then I want to win the national championship this year. Really, we don't know what we have until season starts. You know, we don't know how many players we're gonna get, who's gonna be here. You know, we've re-signed guys like Michael Martinez and Adam Moore, and, you know, bringing back Jerry Grube, and guys like Jesus Aguilar that are on the 40-man, and Tyler Naquin and James Ramsey and Steve Clevenger and Mike Clevenger. And, you know, you get guys like that, but, you know, you never know. You know, we had Aguilar all last year, but he could go out and ball out in the spring and we won't see him again. You know, so it's really hard to say what we expect. It's what we hope for. We hope we can get some more hardware. We hope we can get another ring, and we know that, you know, Chris Tremmey's gonna do a great job managing, and, you know, the coaching staff's gonna have the team ready to play every single day, and you wanna win. You always wanna win. Yep.
All right. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed our conversation this week. If you ain't subscribed to iTunes yet, head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the 108 Stitches Show. We're also on SoundCloud at 108 Stitches Podcast, at Twitter
108 Stitches.
Thank you, Matt.
Gotcha.